It is 9:34. I'm John Matthews, and about a week ago, I received a phone message in the back from Tom Paquette of the Church of Scientology, and he called because he wanted to see if he could place someone on the show, or better put, I mean, he wanted to see if I was interested in speaking to someone that he knew who is in the Church of Scientology who comes or originated from Humboldt County, and I said I would consider that, and I called this person, and eventually he wanted to have this person talk about Scientology and try to clarify the idea of silent birth, which has been receiving a lot of attention due to Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. And I said, yes, we could probably do that, but at the same time, at some point, I would like to transition into the ideas mentioned in the recent article published in Rolling Stone that was written by Janet Reitman. This appeared back on March 9th, and he instantly flinched at that and said that was probably not going to happen. And we talked about it further, and he said that was absolutely not going to happen, but he'd still ask her, and ultimately, no, they did not want to do it any longer. And the reason he gave at the time, it didn't make any sense to me. What he said was that it's not the ideas mentioned in the article were BS, and that was a quote. I think he actually used the two words, and I was a bit sort of taken aback by that. But he said that the ideas mentioned in the article are not topics that are discussed in the general public. It's something similar to, he said, what was it, the Christian church talking about the Immaculate Conception or something bizarre like that. And I didn't really want to clarify on the phone at that point because I just wanted to acquire this woman and I didn't want to make him edgy. So I just, I see. But she can still talk about it. And he said no. And as I said, in the end, no, it was not happening. I could not reach this woman from Humboldt County who is now in the Church of Scientology. But being undeterred, I did track down someone who is capable of talking about Scientology. And he is a research professor in the Computer Science Department and the Center for the Neural Basis of Cognition at Carnegie Mellon University. And he is on the phone from his home right now in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania. And good morning, Professor David Turetsky.
Good morning, John.
I am quite sort of in the dark as to what Scientology is about. I've read things over the years, and of course there's certain articles that appear periodically. But the really sort of fundamental nature of this group of people, I don't really have a grasp of. Could you explain it to me?
You don't have a grasp because you're not supposed to. Scientology never tells you the whole story, and they part of their plan is to maintain mystery about the group. But I'm happy to lay it out for you. When you first encounter Scientology, possibly from a personality test, a free personality test they offer, or now they're doing free stress tests, they're setting up tables in subways and at shopping malls and offering free stress tests, they present themselves as a self-improvement group. They say that they have these very inexpensive courses you can take that will make you a better communicator, or that will improve your personal efficiency, or will make you happier. And so they don't play the religion aspect when they first get you in the door. But if you agree to purchase their Dianetics book, which is what they're trying to sell you when they offer you the free stress test, and you start reading Dianetics, what you discover is that Dianetics is a kind of a quack psychotherapy. Hubbard believed that everything painful that ever happened to you, going back even to your time in the womb, that all these things are literally recorded in part of your mind called the reactive mind, and that you need therapy for these things. And their Scientology's brand of therapy is called auditing, and that by recalling these painful events, you erase them from your reactive mind, and you thereby rid yourself of their harmful effects. So at this point, if you read Dianetics and you've agreed to undergo this kind of auditing, now the price goes up. It gets more expensive the deeper you go. And now you're a member of the Church of Scientology. You're getting this kind of therapy, this Dianetic auditing. And by the way, everything that you tell your therapist is written down. They maintain these written records called PC folders. PC stands for pre-clear. And they own these things. They will use them against you if you ever leave the church and speak out against the church. But assuming that you behave yourself and continue to pay for courses and don't criticize Scientology publicly, you'll go deeper and deeper into this auditing. This Dianetics auditing involves a kind of a light hypnotic trance state, which Hubbard called Dianetic reverie. And as you go further in auditing, you start to discover that not only do you need therapy for all the bad things that happened to you this lifetime, but you're an immortal being. You've lived millions of past lives. and you need therapy for all the bad stuff that happened in all your past lives as well. Scientology actually teaches people to recall painful events from their past lives. Now, if you don't believe in past lives, then what you could say is that what Scientology is doing is they're instilling false memories. There's what's called in psychology false memory syndrome. There have been numerous cases of people who were the victims of incompetent or unethical therapists who were taught to recall incidents of, say, satanic ritual abuse that never occurred. Or there have been movie stars who accused their parents of molesting them when they were kids because they got into some bad therapy and started confabulating memories. Well, in Scientology, false memory syndrome is a sacrament. You are taught as part of your church participation to recall these memories from your past lives. And this is the kind of stuff that they don't like to talk about, but it's not secret. We're not even at the secret levels yet, but we're at the levels that most Scientologists are at. They are trying to go to this state called clear, where they have erased all these painful memories from their reactive mind. And in order to do that, in order to go clear, you need to erase not just your present life bad memories, but your past life bad memories.
So are you saying that, by and large, people who enter Scientology, ultimately they have false memories implanted in them? I mean, is that a fact, really?
Well, I think that they, at this level, they implant their own false memories.
Okay.
Scientology, at this level, doesn't tell them what to remember. What it does is it puts them into a mindset by using this light hypnosis, by surrounding them with fellow believers who believe that these false memories are real. It puts them into a state where they can confabulate and create these false memories, and they're reinforced for doing so.
And again, could you give me an idea of what this false memory would be? You touched on that briefly, but can you give me an example?
Oh, sure. People will recall a life as a peasant, say, 200 years ago in Russia, say. And they said, oh, I can remember I was a peasant and I was living on this farm, you know, plowing the field, and I hit a rock and the plow, you know, cut my leg. And that's a memory that they'll remember. And so for example, imagine that someone had a real present-day medical problem. Right? Maybe they have arthritis or something. And so Scientology would say that, well, these kinds of chronic diseases, things like arthritis or chronic back pain, they teach that these are often psychosomatic, and that if you get enough Scientology auditing, you can be cured of these things. And so if your focus was on your leg because you have arthritis there, you might be taught to, well, remember an earlier time when your leg hurt, right? Oh, I was a kid and I fell off my bike and I almost broke my leg. Okay, very good. Now remember an earlier time. And if you keep doing that, they will get you back to remembering past life incidents where you hurt your leg. And so maybe you were a peasant 200 years ago and the plow hit a rock and cut your leg, and you'll keep going like that.
So is this an average experience for someone who enters the Church of Scientology? Where would this ultimately – where is the next step? Where would it move to?
Well, the next step, for people who have gone clear, and most Scientologists never even get that far. These courses are very expensive. So to get all the way to clear, you're talking about $40,000. And possibly substantially more than that. So most Scientologists never get that far. But the ones who do, in the book Dianetics, Hubbard promised all kinds of benefits for people who were clear. They were supposed to be have perfect memory. They didn't need glasses. They never got colds. They were free of all these psychosomatic illnesses. But unfortunately, as people started going clear, they discovered that they didn't have any of these benefits. And so what Hubbard did was he invented new levels above clear. And there's a whole chart. If you visit a Church of Scientology, you'll see there's a chart on the wall. In one of their rooms, there'll be this chart called the grade chart that shows all the levels. And clear is only about halfway up the grade chart. So above clear, there are these levels called the operating Satan levels. And that's where Tom Cruise and John Travolta and Kirstie Alley are. And they promise even more wondrous things. If you make it all the way up to operating Satan, you're supposed to be able to leave your body at will. You have cause over matter, energy, space, and time. It's great stuff. If they could deliver, we'd all be Scientologists. Unfortunately, they can't deliver.
Now, typically when I hear people like Tom Cruise or other celebrities or people in the media confronted with information like that, they dismiss it by laughing and say, oh, that's just someone's misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's what they're trained to do. People like Tom Cruise are taught how to deal with media questions about Scientology. And Scientology's way of handling the media is to deflect any meaty question, any serious question. They will never tell you what they believe. They'll say, read a book. And that's the end of the conversation. I mean, if you're on the air with someone or you're talking to a reporter and they ask you a meaty question and you just say, read a book, there's nothing left to say. And so that's what they do. They're not interested in discussing the technical details of Scientology with non-believers. They're interested in converting non-believers to believers. And the way you do that is you get people to read books. There's no discussion. There's no academic discussion within Scientology, which is one of the reasons that I don't think it qualifies as a legitimate religion. They may have an IRS tax exemption as a religious organization, but legitimate religions, all legitimate religions, have an intellectual tradition. They have scholars who study their scripture and comment on it, who write new liturgy, who write new philosophy. I mean, look at the history of the Christian church. You have people like Thomas Aquinas, St. Augustine, all the way up to the modern day. The Catholic popes today write books. Nobody writes books in Scientology. L. Ron Hubbard wrote books. He's gone. No one will ever write another book in Scientology. No one will discuss the philosophy. There is no intellectual tradition. It's forbidden. It's explicitly forbidden. In fact, what they call it verbal tech. You may not rephrase, paraphrase, restate any part of Scientology. The only thing you may do is refer people to Hubbard's writings. Tell them, read a book.
So personally, I have an answer as to why they do not study it in depth, because it's just pure madness. But why do you think that they do not look at this intellectually within the church itself?
Well, this is part of Hubbard's genius. He convinced them that was a bad thing to do. So what they're afraid of is that you might, if you've paraphrased or altered in any way, you might ruin it. That Hubbard got it right, that Hubbard got it perfect, and that any alteration of Hubbard's technology, they call it spiritual technology, any alteration would degrade it. And so there's a memo called Keeping Scientology Working that appears, it's the very first memo of every single Scientology course pack. So if you're a Scientologist, you read this thing over and over and over again. And it says very clearly that you must defend the technology, you must not permit any modification, no alteration. And so anyone who tried to rephrase or paraphrase, that would be seen as an alteration, and that would be imperiling your spiritual future to do such a thing.
So L. Ron Hubbard, Ron Hubbard, he created this, and he was a science fiction writer. And I find it just so baffling that people would flock to these ideas based on this person who was creating science fiction at some point. The whole thing just seems so fantastic. Could you tell me a bit about L. Ron Hubbard and his history and how he came about to create Scientology?
Sure. Well, he was a science fiction writer, that's true. And he didn't initially set out to create Scientology as a religion, although he had earlier made a very famous remark that writing for a penny a word is ridiculous. If a man really wanted to make money, he'd start his own religion. He did say that, but that's not where Scientology came from, ironically. What happened was he decided that he was going to make some money writing a self-help book, and so he wrote Dianetics, which Dianetics states very clearly that it's a science. It's called, the full name of the book is Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health. And he says in Dianetics and in the early Dianetics literature that this is all scientific, this is not religious at all. So he created Dianetics, and it was a bestseller in 1950 when it appeared. It was a national bestseller, and it was a sort of a craze. We were just in the right frame of mind. The national zeitgeist was in the right place for Dianetics, and it was at the right time, just the right book at the right time. People started having Dianetics parties in their home, and intellectuals and celebrities were signing up. And he had a few really good months in 1950 where he was selling a lot of books, and he was very popular. And he decided that he could milk this. And so he opened up a Dianetics Institute, and he started offering courses, basically teaching people to be therapists. But as the claims became more elaborate, you know, claiming he could cure disease and so on, he got in trouble with the authorities. He was about to be prosecuted for running an unlicensed medical school in New Jersey when he fled New Jersey and opened up shop somewhere else. I think his next stop was Kansas City. So during this Dianetics auditing, people were recalling these traumas, and some of them started recalling traumas from past lives. And this led to a schism within the Dianetics community. Some people believed that these memories were confabulations, what we would today call false memory syndrome. And some people believed that they were real and they were proof of reincarnation. And Hubbard decided to come down on the latter side. So he said, oh, I've discovered proof of the human spirit, and it's because of these past life memories. And so that's when he created Scientology, to capitalize on this notion that we are immortal beings, and we don't just live this one lifetime, that the brain is not the mind. Scientologists think the brain is only good for very low-level autonomic reflexes, like controlling your breathing, but that your memory, your mind, has nothing to do with the brain. And so that led to the birth of the Church of Scientology in 1954.
And we've touched upon some of the ideas within Scientology very briefly, but what is sort of the foundation of Scientology? And is it to better the person? I mean, why would someone want to be a Scientologist exactly?
Well, they promise amazing things.
Okay.
This grade chart is also called the Bridge to Total Freedom. And at the top of this bridge, they promise to make you a Superman. You can leave your body at will. You can, by the power of your thoughts alone, you can control the physical world. You're what they call at cause. There's actually a lot in common with between Scientology and Aleister Crowley type Satanism. In fact, Hubbard was a devotee of Crowley, although Crowley thought Hubbard was an idiot, but Hubbard was quite impressed with Crowley. Now, I'm not talking about devil worship, where you had this guy with the pitchfork and the horns. That's not what I mean by Satanism. But the Crowley kind of Satanism is based on a belief that people have powers that are untapped, and that by the force of will alone, you can control the physical world. If you're committed enough, if you believe, if you're certain enough, and that's a big word in Scientology, is certainty, you can by force of will alone bend the world to your will. And that's really what Scientology is promising. They don't put it in quite those bald terms, but this whole notion about being at cause, which they use all the time, that's what's at the end of the rainbow. This bridge to total freedom is to be at cause over the world. It's really escape from the human condition that they're offering.
And some of the crazier aspects of Scientology involve OT3 and the warlord Xenu. That, to me, is just bizarre that someone who considers themselves to be a functioning adult could believe that story. Could you explain that?
Yeah, it's fascinating that they can get people to believe that. But sure, let me just take you through how you meet Xenu. So imagine that you've been a loyal Scientologist for several years. You've spent a few hundred thousand dollars on Scientology courses, and including much auditing using a device called the E-meter, which is a kind of a crude lie detector that Scientology sells for $4,000, where you hold on to these two electrodes that look like soup cans, and the auditor looks at this needle, and they ask you questions, and they look at the needle bouncing around as they listen to your answers. So you've gone through hundreds, perhaps several thousand hours of auditing, and you pay by the hour for this stuff. And finally, and you've done OT1 and OT2, which are sort of innocuous, not very interesting levels. And finally, you are going to do OT3, which they call the wall of fire in Scientology. Now, in order to be allowed to do OT3, you have to pass a security check. And they ask you all kinds of questions about your intentions, and they're especially interested in if you ever had any bad thoughts about L. Ron Hubbard. But assuming that you pass the security check, if you're a committed Scientologist, you'll most likely pass. And you come up with the money, which is more tens of thousands of dollars. Then they take you into this room. There's only a few places on the planet where you can do this. There's one in Los Angeles, one in Clearwater. There's one in Denmark. And there's a ship that never enters U.S. waters. You can do it there. So there's four places on the planet where you can do this. They take you into a locked room. The room has a filing cabinet with an alarm on it. So they disable the alarm and unlock the filing cabinet. They take out a folder. They place it on the table. They lock you inside the room. They leave, and they lock you inside the room. And at that point, you're allowed to open up that folder and start reading. And what you read is a document called OT3 data. It's in L. Ron Hubbard's handwriting. I actually have part of this document on my website. And this document says the head of the Galactic Confederation, 76 planets around larger stars visible from here, solved overpopulation by mass implanting. He caused people to be brought to Tegeac, which is the Scientology name for Earth, and put an H-bomb on the principal volcanoes, and then, so he blew them up, and then the Pacific Area ones were taken in boxes to Hawaii, that is the people who were blown up, and the Atlantic Area ones to Las Palmas, and they're packaged. His name, that is the person who did all this stuff, his name was Xenu. He used renegades, and various misleading data by means of circuits, etc., were placed in the implants. What he's saying here is that he brainwashed the spirits of these citizens of the Galactic Confederation. He destroyed their bodies with the H-bombs, and there's more detail about this later in the document. He destroyed their bodies, and then he collected their spirits, and he brainwashed them using these implant things. And then eventually Xenu was deposed. The loyal officers captured him, and after 6 years of battle, put him in an electronic mountain trap where he still is. They are gone. The place has since been a desert. So if you continue reading this document, you get the whole story about what happened to these people. They were massacred. They were dumped on Tegeac. And then the human race evolved some 75 million years later. And these alien spirits infest all of us. They're like spiritual lice. They're attached to all of us. And they're all very confused because of what Xenu did to them. And so what you learn on OT3 is that the reason that you don't have your superpowers yet, even though you went clear and you've done OT1 and OT2 and you still get colds and you still wear glasses and your life is still as mundane as it always was, the reason you haven't recovered your superpowers is that not only do you have the problem of your own reactive mind, which you've supposedly cleared out, but you've got all of these space aliens attached to you, and they've got their reactive minds, and they're messing you up. And so what you do on OT3 is you use this e-meter device to mentally locate these space aliens. They're called body thetans. Thetan is a Scientology word for the spirit. You're a thetan, I'm a thetan. And we all have thousands of body thetans who are attached to us. You locate these body thetans one at a time, and you go through this ritual that they teach you to exorcise them. And that's what you do on OT3. You do this for several hours a day, for days, weeks, possibly months.
Now, again, I do not know how anyone who is responsible or, really thinks about things in a critical way could look at that and do anything but laugh, because it's outrageous. And have you ever spoken to anyone who is within Scientology and asked them how they could possibly believe that? Or, I mean, have you ever met anyone that you consider to be a smart person who is in Scientology?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have a lot of friends who are ex-Scientologists. Scientologists won't talk to me. But I know a lot of ex-Scientologists, quite a few of which have done these upper levels. And it's a fascinating question how you can get to the point where you would accept the Xenu story. But think about the mental state of a person who gets to OT3. This is a person who's already recovered their own memories of past lives, right? They've already done that in the lower level auditing. So it actually it's not all that unreasonable. If your own mind has been telling you for several years now that you can recall details of your own past lives, why should all your past lives have been on this planet? Why shouldn't some of your past lives have been on other planets in other civilizations?
Professor Turetsky, I have to take a break, but can you stay with me for a little while longer? I have a couple more questions.
Sure thing.
Okay, that's David Turetsky. He is a professor, research professor in the Computer Science Department in the Center for the Neural Basis of Cognition over at Carnegie Mellon University, and he has done a great deal of research into Scientology. It is 10:02. This is 94.1 KSLJ FM Hydesville, Eureka, Arcata. I'm John Matthews. And a couple of months ago, I had hoped to speak to an expert about Scientology, and I did not come across David Turetsky at the time. I wish I had, but I didn't. I even called over to HSU and asked around in their religious studies department, and they seemed a bit sort of confused by the question, even just saying they'd never even studied it. And I don't know if there are really that many people who have studied Scientology on sort of a serious level. But the person who has is on the phone. His name is David Turetsky. He's a research professor in the computer science department over at Carnegie Mellon University. And are there other people like you who have looked at Scientology in a substantial way?
I know of one other academic who's taken a critical look at them, and that's Professor Stephen Kent at the University of Alberta. He's a sociology professor who looks at the sociology of religion.
And there is a Scientology, a rather substantial Scientology connection to here in Humboldt County. There is they have a vault up in the hills over by Petrolia where they store some of their historical artifacts. So, I mean, there's a good chance that someone who is, I guess, up high up in the religion could be listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever been to, well, I guess they would not allow you to enter their vaults or their property. Have you ever been to one of their centers anywhere?
Oh, yeah. I've toured, I think, 6 Scientology churches over the years. And I've been to the L. Ron Hubbard Life exhibit in Los Angeles.
Personally, have you ever tried one of their auditing sessions with the E-meter? Or?
No, I've gotten the pinch test, which is a little demo that they do. But to do real auditing, no, I haven't done that.
And this E-meter that you mentioned moments ago, what is that exactly? Is it a real functioning piece of equipment?
Yeah, it's an ohm meter. It measures skin resistance. You can go to Radio Shack and buy an ohm meter for about $15. And this is a little fancier than that, but it's the same principle. It's the same principle that a lie detector uses. Lie detectors, they use more than just skin resistance. They also measure things like breathing rate. But the simplest answer is it's a lie detector.
And yet, again, the church or the people involved with Scientology, they're able to convince people who are doing this that something other than just a simple lie-detecting test is happening? I mean,
oh, they have a whole theory of what the E-meter does. So they it's kind of a magical version of physics. So they believe that you can create mass, physical mass, through the power of thought alone, and that by focusing your attention on some memory, you can make that memory more real and more massive, and that therefore changes the body's resistance. And so that's what they claim the E-meter is measuring. They think that it lets you see a thought. That's their phrase that they like to use.
Beck, he is a musician. Are you familiar with Beck?
Yes.
Yes, he is, of course, one of the many high-profile Scientologists. And he recently put out an album, Wero. And on this album, there's a song, E-Pro, which we were playing for quite some time. It's a big hit for him. And do you know of the lyrics of that song? Is there any connection to the E-Pro? It's E-Pro. Is there a connection to the E-meter? I mean, that's the first thing I thought of when I saw that song title, E-Pro. It must be the E-meter.
I've never heard the phrase E-Pro in Scientology. I don't know if there's any connection.
I don't know either. I just thought, well, if the E-meter, it could be the E-Pro. And outside of Beck, there are several other Scientologists. Of course, Tom Cruise, celebrities, there are Scientologists. Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes, John Travolta. I mean, why do these people gravitate towards this? It seems like there's a disproportionate amount of celebrities, or at least they become high-profile spokespeople for the church. And yes, there are many celebrities who are, in fact, Catholic, for example, but there's just this strange connection, I should say, between Scientology and being a celebrity.
Yes, well, part of it is because Hubbard deliberately courts what he calls opinion leaders, and by that he means explicitly artists, Hollywood celebrities, musicians, and politicians, although they haven't been very successful with politicians. They had Sonny Bono, but that's about it as far as politicians goes. But they actively do court musicians and artists, and I think what happens is that in Hollywood now it's known that Scientology is big in the Hollywood community, and so aspiring actors who want to be part of the in crowd, they might view Scientology as a way of making connections. It's also the case that a lot of these celebrities who are in Scientology got in when they were very young. John Travolta was a high school dropout. Tom Cruise barely graduated high school and was functionally illiterate when he did, according to his own story. Kirstie Alley was a drug addict who got into Scientology through the Narcanon drug rehab program that they run. So they're getting people who are not terribly educated or are very young and very ambitious, and they suck them in with big promises. And then, because of the way auditing works, where you have to go through in great detail your entire sexual history, every petty crime you ever committed, you stole a piece of candy when you were 5, they want to know what flavor, and they're going to write it all down, and they're going to keep those folders forever. They own them, you may not see them, you may not have them. And that's why people like John Travolta and Tom Cruise are never going to leave Scientology.
I've never come across a well-known celebrity who has left Scientology. Is there one out there?
Peggy Lipton, who was at the Mod Squad TV show.
Okay.
She left, but she left quietly.
She never spoke about what happened within the...
No. And there have been a few others who left quietly. No one has left publicly.
And you mentioned Narconon. What is the connection between Narconon and Scientology? Is it just an offshoot, sort of an affiliate of Scientology?
Yeah, and it's important to emphasize that it has nothing to do with Narcotics Anonymous. They play on that confusion deliberately. But Narconon is how it's spelled, is Hubbard's drug treatment program. It's based on Scientology. It uses Scientology principles. They claim that it's secular, and they deny that it has any ties to Scientology. But in fact, Narconon is controlled by Scientologists. It's staffed by Scientologists. It licenses materials from the Scientology organization. And if you look at the content of what they do, it is identical to church teachings and church practices. And they make fantastic claims for Narconon. They claim 86% success rate, which, if you know anything about drug rehab, is just ridiculous. The very best drug rehabs in the country get success rates on the order of 20, maybe 25%.
I've heard a couple of celebrities mention being able to take people off drugs as a reason that they're Scientologists. I think Beck did that once. He said, I've been able to help people get off drugs or something that good. How could it be a bad religion? I mean, that seems to be a default answer that many people give their drug treatment.
Tom Cruise has been saying that, I know. He recently said in this GQ interview that he can get someone off heroin in 3 days. And that's entirely in character for Scientologists to say crazy stuff like that, because they're never going to be forced to provide the proof. I mean, you can't really make Tom Cruise show you the evidence. And even with Narconon, I don't know how they've escaped federal prosecution for this, for making these crazy claims of effectiveness that people who looked into their claims have shown that they're based on invalid studies.
Is Narconon a thriving entity, though? Are they doing well?
I don't know how well they're doing. They are actively recruiting. They have over 150 websites, so they're trying to flood all the search engines. If you search for, like, drug rehab in a search engine, you'll get back 150 Narconon sites and a few other sites as well. So they're certainly advertising it very hard. They were thrown out of the California school system back in 2004. They were thrown out of the San Francisco and Los Angeles school systems, and then the Chancellor for Education of the state of California recommended that they not be allowed in any California school system, because what they were telling the kids were things that were scientifically incorrect. They were telling them things about drugs that were wrong.
Okay. And when it comes to Scientology attacking critics, that is something else that they are well known for. They go after people in the courts, then intimidate them, and people, I guess, shrink away. Is that done just because they don't like criticism? What are they afraid of exactly?
Well, they're running a con game. Time magazine called Scientology a giant global scam. And the problem with running a con game is that if someone exposes the con, then the business dries up. So the internet is killing them because, you know, you never heard about Xenu 20 years ago, because anybody who mentioned it would be immediately sued or in other ways harassed. But I think the tide has really turned for them. I mean, the South Park episode has got to be one of the biggest nails in the coffin. South Park accurately animated the Xenu story. So between that and all the other things going on the web, they're fighting what I believe is ultimately going to be a losing battle to shut down criticism. But they certainly haven't surrendered yet, and they do harass critics regularly, including me. I've had my share.
What did that look like?
Well, for example, they have private investigators following me around. They took photos of my house and my car and my office door, and they put them on the web just to let me know that they are following me around. They've written to people at my university accusing me of all kinds of horrible things, trying to interfere with my employment. They libel me publicly, knowing that I won't sue them. They'd love for me to sue them. I think they've been trying to provoke me into suing them, because that's their favorite battleground. They have a huge legal budget, millions of dollars per year to go to their lawyers. And so to get a critic tied up in a legal fight means all their time is spent in depositions and discovery. And so I can't do what I need to do, which is to tell the public about Scientology.
So you just ignore it and assume that nothing bad will happen to you?
So far, I've been ignoring it, yeah. A lot of what they do seems to backfire. You know, they send these outrageous letters accusing me of all kinds of horrible things, and people who know me get these letters, and it just infuriates them, you know, to see me abused this way. So I think they're doing themselves more harm than they're doing me.
Now, the Rolling Stone article that appeared weeks ago mentions that they have a great deal of money in the bank. I mean, I think the quote was in the billions of dollars, possibly, just their overall take. Is that true as far as you know?
It's hard to know because they don't release any figures. We do know that they have offshore bank accounts in places like Liechtenstein that came out in discovery in a court case, but we don't know the bank balances.
And the money aspect of this, why do they do that? Is that really the end game of the religion? And I personally, I don't consider it to be a religion. I do view it as a cult. Why are they accumulating all this wealth just for the same reason that anyone would want to accumulate wealth?
Their goal is to save the planet. And in order to do that, they need to expand. And they're using all this money in order to fund their expansion. They buy new properties. They renovate properties. They purchase publicity. You know, they used to run these Dianetics infomercials, half-hour infomercials on TV.
I've seen those.
And so all this takes money. Their war against the critics costs them millions of dollars a year in lawyer fees and PI fees. All this is expensive. If you want to take over the world, which is what they want to do, Hubbard's goal was to have a Scientology planet. That Scientology would be the government. Scientology would be the whole society would be a Scientology society, and those who opposed Scientology would be isolated, put in detainment in detainment camps, and basically kept away from civilized society. So they're a long way from accomplishing that, but that's the goal.
I do view Scientology as an extreme fringe group, and yet they are able to sustain this bank account, and of course their profile is quite high, and they seem to be a strong group of people to a certain extent. I mean, completely insane as far as I'm concerned, but how are they able to attract that many people and then maintain this juggernaut of some sort? I don't understand that.
I think the demographics are changing. They don't appear to be expanding despite their claims. You know, they for 10 years, they told journalists that they were the fastest growing religion on the planet and they had 8 million members. Well, it was 8 million members for 10 years in a row. Finally, somebody called them on it, and so now they're claiming 9 million members or maybe 10 million, depending on who you ask. But they're not. Their real membership is about 100,000 worldwide, as far as we know. About half of those are in the U.S. They're bleeding members at a prodigious rate now. The tide really has turned. They're not able to recruit people the way they could in pre-internet days. So the demographics of Scientology membership is shifting. They still have people who've been in for 30 years. You know, 30 years ago in the 1970s, Scientology was cool, and they were able to attract professional people, educated people, people with money. And those people are getting older now. But they're not attracting people like that anymore. And so if you look at who are the young people in Scientology today, they're basically two kinds. They're children of Scientologists who grew up in a Scientology family. And these kids typically don't go to college. They're not turning into professionals. Some of them are working for the church's staff, like Ann Archer's son is a 38-year-old staff member working at the Scientology base in the desert in Hemet. And the other kind of person they're able to attract are people who just aren't doing very well in life. Some of them are drug addicts who come in through Narcanon. Some of them are college dropouts or even high school dropouts who they're aimless, they're uneducated, they somehow get sucked into the cult, and they end up as staff members. And those are the new faces of Scientology. They're not able to sustain the kind of recruiting that they had 30 years ago.
And do you think eventually the whole institution will disintegrate?
I do think that, yes.
Okay. And as I mentioned, you are a professor over at Carnegie Mellon University in the Computer Science Department, and your website lists your research interests, including neural representation of space in rodents and in robots, computational neuroscience, animal learning, and yet you've done a great deal of research into Scientology. Why is that?
It started out as a free speech issue. In 1995, Scientology was trying to prevent critical speech about them from appearing on the Internet. They were actually censoring posts on a Usenet discussion group. And so I heard about that, and I wandered over, completely innocent, I knew nothing about them. I just wandered over to this news group just to take a look and see what all the fuss was about. And just as I got there, a guy named Arnie Lerma posted a court document called the Fishman Declaration. It was part of a lawsuit taking place in California. And he said, you better download this quickly because Scientology is going to cancel this post in a few hours. And I thought to myself, well, that's not very nice of them canceling this guy's posting. It's just a court document. I wonder what they would do if somebody turned this into a website. So So I decided to do the experiment just on the spur of the moment, and I downloaded this Fishman Declaration, and it was one of the very first web pages I ever built. And I announced it on this news group, this alt-religion Scientology news group, and I went home and went to sleep. And all hell broke loose. The Scientologists phoned, faxed, and FedExed the university. They contacted the general counsel, the vice president for computing. I mean, they were really, really pissed. And they were claiming copyright violation and trade secret violation. And so I looked at this thing. What is in this court document, this Fishman Declaration? Well, it turns out what was in there was the story of Xenu, the evil galactic overlord, which is the thing they charged hundreds of thousands of dollars for. And so now I understood why they were so upset. But I was also fascinated that, you know, I had the same questions that you have. What could lead a person to believe in this stuff? What do they really think? And so I started studying them, and the more I learned about them, the more I was convinced that they were a threat to this country. I think that they posed a serious threat to free speech on the internet through various legal means that they were pursuing. And they're also just they're a threat to the government. Scientologists infiltrated the U.S. government in the 1970s. In fact, 11 Scientologists went to prison for, among other things, stealing the FBI's own files and bugging a conference room at the IRS. So they mounted the largest domestic intelligence attack on the U.S. government in our nation's history. And one of the people who was responsible for that was L. Ron Hubbard's wife, Mary Sue. So this is a dangerous group, and I think that they need to be opposed, and not many people have the stomach to do it, but I just find it hugely entertaining. So it's my odd little hobby.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it, and I find it entertaining as well. And you can go to his website, which is found through the Carnegie Mellon larger website. Again, his name is Professor David Turetsky. And thank you again for talking to me.
My pleasure. And if I could just give out one URL,
yes.
The best place to look to learn about this stuff is xenu.net. That's X-E-N-U.net. It's not my website, but it's a very good one.
Thanks again.
My pleasure.